Welcome to the Closing Mark Report. It's September the 27th, 2007. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Dan Zwicker of ADM Grain Group out of Decatur, Illinois. And then we'll discuss the cash grain market with Bill Mayer. He's at Rochag Marketing, based in the elevator in Lexington, Illinois. A bit later in the program, we'll hear from Peter Levitt. He'll join us just after the bottom of the hour to take a complete look at today's agricultural weather forecast. And don't forget, this is a full hour-long edition of AM 580's Closing Market Report. In the second half hour this afternoon, we'll get an update from the combines in Iowa, Minnesota, and right here in the state of Illinois. So stay with us for this hour-long edition on Thursday of the Closing Market Report.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Stuart Peterson. For over 20 years, Stuart Peterson has helped farmers manage both marketing opportunities and risks through their analysis, advice, and action. Stuart Peterson's team of experts and strategic consulting approach utilize the latest technology. Stuart Peterson, confidence like never before. More information is available at www.stuart-peterson.com.
In Chicago, on this Thursday afternoon, futures finished the day like this. The nearby December contract in the wheat pit at $9.33 for the soft red, 15¾ higher. March contract at $9.36.5, up 14½ of the May contract at $8.41, 18 cents higher. December futures in the corn pit, $3.86¾. The settlement price up 11¾. March futures at $4.02¼, up 11½ of the May contract at $4.11¼, up 11¾. December contract in the corn pit for the afternoon, up 7¾ for next year at $4.24¼. November bean futures, $10.09, 18¼ the gain for the afternoon. January futures finished at $10.25¼, up 19, and the March contract at $10.33¾, up 18¼. November soybeans next year at $9.74, they finished 18 cents higher. October bean meal, $2.82.80, up $4.40. December at $2.88.80, up $4 even. October bean oil, $36.68, 71 higher. December bean oil, 81 higher at $40.35. October live cattle, $96.90, the settlement price down 35 cents at the mercantile exchange for the nearby contract. December futures in the live cattle pit at $100.20, 15 higher. September feeder cattle at 116.75, 22½ higher. Feeder cattle October contract at 115.50, down 42½. October lean hogs, 58.90, $1.40 lower, and December futures at 62.50, 2½. They were 12½ cents higher. The February futures, 68.35, 57½ cents higher on the afternoon. Outside markets now. November crude oil, $82.86, 256 higher. December futures at 81.50, up 264. The CRB index at 336.43 is up 4.51. And the Dow Jones Industrial Average now stands at 13,887. And it's just about 10 points higher on the afternoon.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Joining us now to take a look at what happened at the Chicago Board of Trade and the Mercantile Exchange is Dan Zwicker of ADM Grain Group out of Decatur, Illinois. Good afternoon to you, Dan.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Well, Dan, I think maybe you should take us through some of the cycles. We ought to start with the wheat pit and all the contract highs that have been made. Tell me what you make of it, where we might be headed in your opinion.
Well, my guess here is that the low that we made here a couple, 3 weeks ago in the wheat market, basically here we're talking about the, you know, the middle part of August on all of this stuff is probably the start of a real strong new leg to the upside. And you can kind of see that, you know, we had the first run up and then we kind of had a hesitation and then we started breaking to the upside here late last week and then we followed through this week, and you just got to be kind of friendly this stuff from a technical perspective. Now, I'm sure you're going to start hearing a lot of, you know, $10 type wheat objectives from the technical side because that's, you know, depending upon how you want to draw your objectives, you can find ways of getting the lead futures wheat contract maybe as high as 10 something, but you got to have the fundamental fuel to drive it. And I think today you can kind of see that a couple things. Weekly export sales were very strong at 55 million or 56 million bushels. And I think we got an unknown destination sale That's going to be in next week's report. So demand for wheat is very strong. World supplies are still perceived to be shrinking, with the Australian wheat crop estimates keep coming downward. So I think the wheat market is probably in pretty good shape to stay on a firm note, at least into the October crop report, on anticipation that USDA is going to make some further downward adjustments in world supplies.
And then what are your suggestions to producers at this point and how they should deal with all this information?
Well, my guess is most producers have their old crop wheat probably long gone, and they're taking a look at what they should be doing maybe with their 08 production. And I think, you know, a good way to approach the wheat market is maybe to use what we would call as a floor-type cash contract. This is kind of a basis contract with a put hook to it, so it protects you from the downside and it has your basis locked in, and it would allow you to take advantage of further price advances. That's one way to approach it. Another way to approach the wheat market is maybe do a straight cash forward sale of new crop. Depending upon which location, we're maybe talking cash bids now maybe as high as $6 in some areas. And for the listening audience to the south of us, you know, when you look at $6 type cash wheat prices, and then you maybe follow it up with some $9 soybean prices on a double crop, we're starting to talk some fantastic type per acre grosses for the lower half of our growing or our listening audience. So I think anybody that is definitely using these market signals of wheat and soybeans and going to switch acreage into that wheat-soybean double crop mix is going to needs to start taking a look at some kind of defensive type a marketing program in here, defend it with puts, you know, hedge to arrives or cash forward sales, or like I mentioned earlier, like a floor price type contract.
Now, I know that you deal mostly on the cash side, but there will be those producers out there who've decided to speculate and take advantage of the wheat-corn spread. Probably has gone against them at this point just a bit. Should they hang on and go through the margins?
No. I don't even know if I want to go there. Let me take a look here. I think I got it hooked up on my chart here someplace. Well, right at the moment, you've got a D-sweet corn spread. It's at, $5.46. And we're probably got kind of like a double top in here. I suppose initially I'd say as long as you had the potential of a double top, you maybe stay with that position. If you start breaking into new highs, if wheat starts gaining on corn into new highs, then you have to reevaluate your position on that. But that's a highly speculative type position, and when you're in those kind of situations, especially with this type of ratio, things could get quite volatile, because you could get into the exchange could begin to get concerned. It may start making different rules, different margin requirements, and that kind of stuff. So there's a lot of volatility in a spread like that, and it's definitely a highly speculative type situation.
Well, let's step out of the spread and then step right into the corn market. What do you see on the charts for the corn?
Corn's looking real good. My guess here, with this solid breakout now above the 370s, and then today we completed filling a lead futures chart gap that was left a long time ago on the way down off of our June high. That was filled in here. The next level, I think, probably chart people are going to be talking about is something probably up in this $4 to $4.10 area is probably going to be, you're going to hear an awful lot of talk going back to $4 on the futures. But corn's going to have a reason to do that. And when you look at a couple opportunities here, you'd have to say tomorrow's report is one of them. Maybe the stocks number comes in much smaller than what the trade was looking at. And then if it does that, then that kind of eases up or erases some of this yield gain that we've been hearing about across the Corn Belt. So, and then you also have the October crop report. Acreage adjustments could come in there. Now, these acreage adjustments could come either way, but, you know, October reports are known for acreage adjustments, and, you know, if you remember, a year ago is the one that got actually got the Corn Bowl really going when USDA came in there and made some downward adjustments in harvested acreage.
Now, what are you looking forward to out of the quarterly grain stocks report tomorrow morning?
Well, the way the market has performed since September 1st, I got to go with the idea that the trade averages, that we're going to come in underneath the trade averages. I think the I usually, the September crop report is one of those, or a quarterly crop reports that you usually explains why you did what you did during the month of September. In this case, the markets have strengthened during September. So, if I was guessing, and that if I was going to guess one side or the other, that the market, that the numbers would come in above or below the trade, I would say that I would favor below trade guesses, and would be viewed as somewhat positive toward the marketplace.
So you would be below the 1.146?
Yes. And the beans, I think there's the way the beans have rallied, there could be a significant cut in bean stocks. And that would be something that, to be watchful, that maybe these bean stocks were only 475 or 500, and all of a sudden that changes the balance sheet again toward the positive side, especially with the lower planted acres that we have. So, and then the wheat number, if we come in smaller, that would say that the wheat crop maybe is not as big as what the trade was working, and then that would help justify this, you know, 45-cent advance we've had here in the past 2 days.
What would be true? No, that's fine. What would be truly bad news on the wheat and the soybean numbers?
Oh, bad news. I suppose bad news would be if you found an extra 100 million bushels of corn, would probably be viewed as a little negative, especially since it's perceived as we're growing stocks as it is. I would say the bean number, if the bean number was 50 million bushels higher, that would probably be a little negative, or 60 million bushels higher would be a little negative. The wheat number, I'm not too sure you could really throw it a real negative curveball, but something probably in the magnitude of 100 to 150 bushels larger than what the trade's looking at would maybe be viewed as a little bearish. But the wheat market is being driven by shortness of world inventory supplies more so than what the USDA produced, or I mean what the U.S. produced and or will produce.
What have you been hearing out of the soy complex?
As far as yields go, there are some good bean yields around, but there's also some real weak sisters on the bean yields, and I guess I haven't seen anything or heard a consistent enough bean yields to say that the bean yields number is going up. My biases would be that it would stay unchanged, maybe going down as far as the yield goes from what I've heard on bean harvested acres.
Are you happy with the chart action for the soybeans at this point?
Well, if you're a bull, you're happy. I think that the beans, you know, like I said, you're going to start hearing a lot of 10.50 now. You're going to start hearing some $11 numbers, I think, from Chartist. It's highly emotionally charged bean market. The volatility I expect to kind of pick up in here. But soybeans have met. I mean, this is the first day I think we've closed everything in at least the old crop months here above the $10 mark. That might be something to kind of mark down on your calendar. But chart action is positive for some further advances. And I think there's reason to believe that this market could stay firm at least until the October crop report and we get some world numbers and some supply-demand revisions for the U.S. Crop.
There was a time when people were comparing the rallies that we've had in this set of grains and oil seeds to the mid-90s. There was a time when they compared it to the 70s and the export boom. Is it altogether different now in your mind?
Well, every period is different, and it's driven by different things. But I suppose if I was going to relate it, at least to my time of watching the markets, I think it's more closely related to something in the 70s. The players are different, but you kind of have the same factors. You've got sharply higher energy prices. You've had a lot of heavy defense spending. Where in the 60s and early 70s, it was the Vietnam War. We've spent a lot of money in the Mideast here over the past 10 years. So we've got bulging government deficits. You got cheap money. You kind of got the Federal Reserve Board in a position where they can't raise interest rates to slow inflation because it would tip the economy into a recession. So instead, they ease money supplies to keep the economy from going into a recession. So in Russia, Russia was the big grain buyer in the 70s. Now you got China as the big catalyst for demand here in the double O's here. So I guess, the way I would relate to it, it would be something similar to the 70s.
We appreciate you being with us today.
Very well.
Thanks much. That's Dan Zwicker of ADM Grain Group. Joined us here from his Decatur, Illinois office each and every Thursday afternoon.
Agricultural programs are made possible with support from Cargill, featuring ProPricing Grain Contracts, a marketing program providing a variety of contracts designed to fit a farmer's performance goals and risk tolerance. Information on the web at CargillProPricing.com.
Well, just after the bottom of the hour, we'll talk with agricultural meteorologist Peter Levitt. A quick reminder that we'll have some combine reports in the second half hour of the closing market report this afternoon. Those coming from central Illinois, the northwestern part of Iowa, and south central part of Minnesota. And tomorrow, we want you to stay tuned to this show for the whole hour because Rob Fraley of Monsanto will be along. He'll be talking about all those technology jumps you can expect out of Monsanto, Dow AgriServices, and the Smart Stacks, and drought tolerance in corn and nitrogen fixation. And you'll want to call in with your questions. We sure hope you do. That'll be tomorrow afternoon right here on the Closing Market Report. Monsanto kind enough to clear out to Rob Fraley's schedule to talk with you and take your questions tomorrow afternoon right here on AM 580. A quick look at the forecast. Ed Kieser says clear to partly cloudy tonight. Lows from 43 in northwestern Illinois to 53 in southern Indiana. Well, up next, the harvest season is in full swing around the Midwest, and the places you'd expect to find the best cash prices have changed. We'll have more on the way ethanol production has impacted farmers in the state of Illinois. Corn farmers around the nation are harvesting what we used to call a bumper crop. Normally, that would mean big yields, big piles of corn on the ground, and no place for it to go. This year, we've got the big yields. USDA says 155.8 bushels to the acre nationwide. The big piles on the ground are coming. The total crop should push 13.3 billion bushels, the biggest ever, and a lot of places for the crop to go, at least if you live in Ohio, Minnesota, or Iowa. Those are the states where most of the ethanol plants have been built, along with Nebraska. In Illinois, not so much. And farmers in that state harvesting a record-setting 180 bushels to the acre corn crop this fall have been left, so to speak, holding the bag. They're used to having the best cash prices in the nation, sometimes referred to as the basis. That's because 40% of the Illinois corn crop is exported down the river system to the port of New Orleans, says University of Illinois ag economist Darryl Good.
We do move a lot of corn and soybeans down the river. Some of it obviously goes rail as well to the Gulf, but transportation costs in general are higher. And so you see this. I mean, a pretty weak basis in Illinois, and then you look at a state like Iowa, where basis has traditionally been much weaker than in Illinois. Because of the ethanol boom there, they're experiencing very strong basis because they've cut their transportation costs quite a bit in that state, everything basically remaining in-state rather than moving either to the Mississippi River or to the West Coast for export. It's staying at home.
Staying at home and used more and more to feed ethanol plants. USDA in September predicted this coming year about 25% of the U.S. corn crop being harvested right now will go to make ethanol. Just 17% will go down the river. The number of bushels to be exported really haven't dropped, but they haven't kept pace either. It all means Illinois corn farmers are seeing cash prices more like those once found in Iowa, Minnesota, and Ohio. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason.
This is Dan Simeone, local host of Morning Edition on AM 580. WillPledge.org. Bookmark it.
Time now for our Thursday look at the cash grain market. Bill Mayer, Rochag Marketing out of Lexington, Illinois, joins us this afternoon. Good afternoon to you, Bill.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Is the elevator still open this afternoon?
Yep. Yeah, they're still taking corn for a while here now.
And they expect to be plugged up anytime soon?
Well, no. I mean, it's they're trying to kind of pace the harvest here is what they're looking at and trying to keep things moving. You know, it's just the speed with which the grain comes in has increased, of course, over the last couple of years.
And basis levels have been strong?
Yeah, really, corn basis levels since last Thursday when we talked have increased pretty good in some, both processor and river. The freight's down. That might be a sign of, you know, some of the easing of the need for barges and storage down there in the Delta, and the bean basis steady to better for the week.
What do you make of the strong basis in the midst of a big harvest?
Well, I think it's a sign of the demand. I mean, on the corn, we've talked many times, I think, on different shows, and that you're using a billion bushels of corn or more per month now. So, I mean, that's using things up. The other thing, I mean, it's not increased to a level where it's above average. We're still, if you look at a five-year average basis, we're still on the bottom side of the what an average basis would be.
And what are farmers doing with their grain? Are they selling it across the scale for the most part?
Well, we've had a lot of questions. Of course, depending on what stage of harvest they're in, they're applying contracts or looking at, you know, if they get done and see what their overruns are. I think there's been today some pretty good selling, yeah.
Yeah, I suppose a lot of smiles and a lot of waves as they're passing one another in the fields and on the roadways, aren't there?
Yep, I think a pretty good situation out here.
Not too terribly bad. So the next question then is how might they deal with that grain that they do have that they just can't do anything with? If they sell it over the scale, you think they'll be satisfied with the prices they get?
Well, I guess at this point, yes, I think they probably will. I guess I think you need to take the approach as to as you come out of harvest, what percent of your crop do you want to still own, and look at and fit that then into your logistics, your storage at home, and your situation as far as commercial storage goes. But you need to have a plan out here, like we always say. And say, as I get done and I come out of harvest, I'd like to have whatever that number is, 30% of the crop that I have unpriced at that point.
And I know they're busy in their combines, but they'll have some time as they run up and down the fields and make those rounds to think about some of those decisions.
Yeah, and they're starting to get far enough along now that they know, you know, have a pretty good feel for the yields, it seems like.
And what are your bids for the day there at Lexington?
340 on cash corn, 940 on beans.
We appreciate you being with us, Bill.
Thanks.
That's Bill Mayer. He's with Rochag Marketing. He's based in the elevator in Lexington, Illinois. Joins us on Thursday afternoons. In 2 minutes, we'll talk with agricultural meteorologist Pete Levitt about the ag weather forecast, and then a combine update from central Illinois, the northwestern part of Iowa, and the south central part of Minnesota. This is WILL AM 580. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. I'm Todd Gleason. Your regional newscast comes up right now.
With this look at AM 580 News, I'm Tom Rogers. The state of Illinois is expanding its program to screen women for breast and cervical cancer. Starting October 1st, uninsured women between 40 and 64 will be able to get free mammograms, and uninsured women between 35 and 64 will be eligible for free tests for cervical cancer. The Carle Foundation plans to expand its medical facilities between Mattoon and Charleston. The decision to build the $5 million additions come months after state health officials turned down Carl's plans to build an outpatient surgery center. The new plans call for more space for visiting specialists, new procedure rooms and diagnostic instruments, and an expanded pharmacy at its Lerner Road facility in Mattoon. The Park Drive Carl facility next to Sarah Bush Lincoln Health Center will include a new sleep lab and room for therapy services. Carl's also expanding hours for its convenient care services. Sarah Bush Lincoln had challenged Carl's outpatient surgery plans, saying it would duplicate services. A spokeswoman withheld comment today on the new expansion plans. Urbana police say a possible door-to-door scam may be taking place. They say they've received complaints from some homes on the south side that people have been trying to raise money for what they call the Integrity Program, saying the money would go toward college or a school trip. Police say they can't verify the legitimacy of the Integrity Program, and a bookstore chain that the door-to-door salespeople claim to be associated with says they have nothing to do with the group. The Housing Authority of Champaign County is looking for potential future rental property for low-income residents. They're asking for donations from anyone who has unmaintained land or buildings that could become Section 8 eligible housing. The director of the Housing Authority says donations are tax deductible and the authority takes responsibility for safety and maintenance. Officials say President Bush and other guests will be in Kentucky to kick off a national celebration marking Abraham Lincoln's birth. Lincoln's boyhood home of Hodgenville is a small town southeast of Louisville. It'll host thousands when the national celebration begins in February. And Lincoln events to celebrate the bicentennial were also planned in several other Kentucky cities, as well as events in Illinois and Indiana, as well as Washington, D.C. I'm Tom Rogers, AM 580 News.
This is David Inge, host of Focus 580, urging you to keep pledge drives shorter. You can call us right now at 217-244-9455.
Time now to take a look at the agricultural weather forecast on a Thursday afternoon. We're joined by Pete Levitt, a meteorologist. Good afternoon to you, Pete.
Good afternoon, Todd.
It's kind of a beautiful day here in the Midwest.
Oh, indeed it is, and we're going to see a lot more of them, I think, in this coming week with very little chance of any significant precipitation in the eastern Corn Belt, maybe a little bit of an opportunity around Monday or Tuesday with some systems going by to the north, but really it's just a beautiful outlook. A weak cold front, a dry front going by this evening and tonight will just cool off temperatures a little bit, but they'll stay above normal. We're still looking for highs tomorrow and up around 80 for tomorrow and Saturday. And then into Sunday, the warmer temperatures come right back in again. We run about 8 to 10 degrees above normal next week with temperatures getting up into the 80s most days. So you can't get much better than that, especially for Illinois eastward. We do see some rain coming into Iowa later in the week, but I don't think it's going to make much progress eastward.
And if you could talk a little bit about how things have set up for the Great Plains and their hard red winter wheat crop, and they're part of the way through the sowing process there.
Yeah, well, the problem really has been in the Southern Plains because things have been so wet that equipment's had a problem getting the stuff in. Some of these areas that had such exceptional moisture earlier in the season, through the summer season, in some areas just weren't dry enough to put a planter through. But so they're running a little behind there. They're mostly ahead of schedule. But then there's a school of thought of things that, if you've got to have something, wet is usually good in the normally dry portions of the Southern Plains.
And then if you could check in on the progress that's being made in South America and how weather conditions are faring.
Yeah, South America is okay. We don't have a problem down there, I don't believe, with the problem. The real problem, as you suggested last week, is really Australia.
Mm-hmm.
And they didn't get any rain this week of any significance. They've had 3 months of drought. This is the equivalent to having absolutely dry conditions in the Southern Plains, say, from January through March. And it's having a huge impact on the wheat crop, much more than I expected to see last week, losing as much as 10 million tons off their crop, 40% of their crop prospects. Now, this is new crop, the crop that's going to be maturing over the next several weeks. It's just not going to be there, and, of course, that keeps driving the wheat market.
Anything else to add before I let you go for the afternoon?
No, I think we're looking for this continuation of Indian summer, and I think we should all enjoy that. And that should allow harvest, by the way, to just move ahead quite rapidly over this next week.
Pete, we thank you much.
My pleasure.
And that is Pete Levitt. He joins us from Massachusetts, where he's a meteorologist and is here on our air each and every Thursday afternoon to take a look at the agricultural weather forecast.
Today's broadcast is made possible in part by a grant from The Great Impasta, a restaurant serving foods from northern Italy. The Great Impasta now offers a private dining room for parties, meetings, and other events. The Great Impasta is at 114 West Church in Champaign. The staff of The Great Impasta encourage you to join them in supporting WILL AM 580.
Some people seek to lose themselves in nature.
There's a meditative quality, for me anyway, about being out on the land.
For others, it just happens.
Where is the trail?
I think it just keeps going over this way.
I'm Jay Allison, and I hope you'll join me for stories from the heart of the land.
I lost it again. That's it. That looks good.
Our series on the connection between people and the natural world.
Saturday at 5 on WILL Urbana.
You're listening to the Closing Mark Report. I'm Todd Gleason. It's our extended extra half hour of the report on the line with us now to talk a little bit about some of those wet things that have happened in fields before and how to keep them from being wet is tile drainage specialist Scott Day of Day Drainage right here in East Central Illinois. Hi, Scott. How are you this afternoon?
Hi, Todd. Doing good.
Are you working this afternoon?
Yes, we are.
And how much tile have you been putting in recently?
Quite an awful lot here recently. It's we've been fortunate the crops came off early, so we were able to get in the fields a little sooner than previous years.
When a farmer looks out at his fields, what are the places that you suggest he looks at first to put tile in?
Basically what we do, we actually go out and survey with our GeoStar system and lay out and design the entire field, and depending on his budget, we'll go out and address the worst areas first, depending on his yields and his yield map input.
What kind of rewards and yield do they usually get after you do a good job of tiling?
Well, it depends on, a lot of it depends on certain circumstances, but the biggest thing is probably the soil type. Some soil type will actually yield better with tile improvements. Other porous soils will yield greatly. We've seen anything from 30 bushel to 15, somewhere in that range probably.
And the other big advantage is that they're able to get in earlier and it for the planting season?
Yeah, exactly. They can get in earlier, which also has inputs to their yield. They use less fuel because the ground works a lot easier when it's tile drained. When it's mucky and wet, you use more fuel, which, that isn't a cheap commodity anymore today. So if you look at all your input costs, you can cut back in a lot of different ways.
What's the cost to put an acre of tile in or to drain tile?
Usually it runs around $600 an acre for an 80-foot system, somewhere in that area, about $600 per acre, if including all the mains and so forth. So it's somewhere in that ballpark. It depends on a lot of different circumstances, but roughly that's the cost that we usually shoot for and give them a rough ballpark figure with that.
We appreciate you being with us this afternoon, Scott. Stay safe out there, and thanks for joining us today.
Oh, and you're welcome. Thanks for calling us.
You're welcome. That's Scott Day of Day Drainage out of Mahomet, Illinois. We thought we'd check in with one of those folks that helps to service the agricultural area in East Central Illinois. And drainage, of course, is one of the things that has improved across the Midwest over the last 100 years. There are clay tiles in this part of the world that are probably older than that and very deep in the soil, and that's how a good portion of the Midwest is anymore. Tile continues to be a very important part of the agricultural system we have here in the state of Illinois and across the Midwest. In a couple of moments, we'll hear three back-to-back interviews I did this morning with folks that are on the combine across the Midwest, one in Illinois, one in Iowa, and one in Minnesota. So stay with us.
Support for The World comes from Mike Weaver Ballroom Dance, private instruction for social or competitive dancing, weddings, or other special events. Lessons for singles or couples, beginners or advanced of all ages. Information at 378-4601 or on your web search at Mike Weaver Ballroom Dance.
Well, from time to time on this show, you know, I talk about my brothers. They farm and live in Logan County, Elkhart, Broadwell, Middletown area, which is in the middle of the state of Illinois. My brother Tim, who's 5 years older than I am, is on the line with us now. They've been in the field, what, for 2 or 3 weeks now? How long has it been, Tim?
We started September 4th.
How close are you to being done?
Oh, gosh. We're definitely over half. I don't know. Depends on weather.
Corn with corn and soybeans both?
Yeah, both, because we got two combines going, working on both right now.
And so how have the corn yields been?
Corn has been really good. From 190 to 230, you know, it's just depending on where it rained and varieties, and awful good, though.
How about your soybeans?
Soybeans so far have been running in that, on some sandier stuff, probably 45, 46, and our good ground's been 55, 56.
Now, you don't own semis, but you have a few trucks. Have you been able to get semis from the elevators to keep it away from those two combines? They're pretty good-sized combines.
Yeah, we've got the Elkhart Grant's been sending us out trucks when we can get them, but they seem like today they're even closed on a Thursday. The whole elevator's closed down to move corn out.
There was my next question. I wondered whether things were going to start plugging up, and apparently they have on a Thursday in Elkhart, Illinois. They closed the elevator down, so you've got bin space, so you move to...
Yeah, we're doing bins, and then when they open, we, you know, come back in and haul stuff in. But right now, we moved a lot of corn out early in early to the elevator, and right now we've got bins so we can kind of, when we can get trucks, we'll take them and fill bins at the same time. So it's working pretty good that way.
Now, you have your choice sometimes. You can go to Elkhart, which is the local elevator, or you can actually go direct to the river. Usually that's out of the bin. I don't know whether you do that out of the field anymore or not. Have you been watching that river basis much? How does that compare?
I get online and check all the bases because, I mean, even you never know from one day. Just because what the market does kind of is irrelevant sometimes in what our prices are. Like just recently, you know, corn's been rallying where we did have a 27-cent carry from, you know, fall bid to January. And all of a sudden that's gone to where it's only 18 cents this morning. So, you know, the carry is in the last, 3 days is dropped while corn has rallied. The fall corn bid is going up. And I don't know if that's probably because maybe they're trying to get rid of some of this so we don't store it. I don't know. The elevators, it's kind of weird how it's gone up here lately, but on the old crop bid.
Yeah. Tell me about your soybeans.
Soybeans, we grow a lot of seed beans, so we store a lot of them, and we don't really haul too many to the elevator.
Harvest gone well for it? And how are the seed beans? Are they little because of dry weather? Do they look good?
You know what? Some of them have been fairly small, but there are varieties in them, too. We grow one number that's always large, and it's large again this year, so Actually, the beans were better, maybe just a little better than I thought they might be because of the hot, dry August, you know, we had. So, but they aren't, you know, huge like the corn crop is here in this state. But I think the beans are, depending on where, if you caught a few, we caught an extra rain, I think, in our area more than a lot of people did. So I don't know if the beans are going to be that good or not.
You know, and one final thing, I want you to talk, and I don't know how comfortable you'll be about this, but I want you to talk a little bit about the competitive or comparative advantage that you and Bill and Larry and Rob and Dad have, you think, in the area, because you're all individual farmers and all incorporated on your own, but you work together so you look like a much larger farm. Does that help out very much? We discuss that on the air from time to time, and I talk about it with the ag economist upstairs, that
sharing equipment and combines. Really, if you can make the farm look bigger than it is, gives you an advantage. And because you're all family, it's easier, I suppose, than trying to do it with individual farmers that aren't related. But does it work very well?
Oh, we've been doing it for quite a while now. Yeah, I think we've got it down as far as working together. I mean, there's four of us farm together. We buy a combine, we all buy a fourth of it. And it goes over a lot of acres where, if I was farming myself, that it'd just be a bigger expense. We spread that machinery out of quite a few acres, so our machinery cost is probably comparably lower than a lot of farmers around that are farming by themselves or just maybe two of them together. So, plus all four of us working, we have a pretty good labor force going along. My dad helps out too every once in a while, so we're able to do, a lot of seed bean acres where it takes time to move and clean out stuff. And, I think we're competitive in that direction anyway.
All right, Tim. Well, thanks for joining us. I appreciate it a lot. And be safe out there, okay?
All right. Thanks, Todd.
Yep. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Dale and Rose Gallus from Marcus, Iowa, are on the line now joining us. They're listeners outside of our area, but on the web, and they also have been contributors to the radio station. Thank you very much for your contributions. The financial support is really very much appreciated, Dale. Can you tell us a little bit about your farm there in Marcus, Iowa, and maybe you could start geographically by telling us where that is?
We're in Northwest Iowa. 45 miles northeast of Sioux City.
And how big a farm do you have, mostly corn and soybeans?
Yes.
Have you gotten started yet on harvest season?
We have just started on the beans.
And
there's been a little bit of corn done.
Yeah.
A wide range of yield, anywhere from the upper 40s to the middle 60s. And our rain patterns were real streaked. You can see 10, 15 bushel difference in fields that are half a mile long where rain cut across on it. So we're running from 60s, a little better, to the upper 40s. You don't hear the guys talk about some of the poor fields. There's some beans that are short, just on lighter ground on it.
And tell me what soil conditions are like in general in your area. I know that soil conditions vary a lot in the fields, but in general, are you flat? Are you rolling? What kind of soil conditions?
We're from flat to gently rolling. Some is real flat here north of Marcus, and around it is just nice, gentle rolling.
And do you know what the soil types are?
Oh, Marcus. Have to look at my map.
That's okay, but are they rated?
It's good ground.
It's good ground.
Where it's flat, it's good black ground.
Good black, heavy dirts.
Yep. They do better in a drier year than they do in a wetter year. A little bit rolling is just the opposite.
No, the beans mostly drilled, and are they?
No, mostly 30-inch rows.
Mostly 30-inch rows.
Few drilled, but years ago when they went to drill, they had trouble with white mold, so a lot of them went back to 30-inch rows.
And then on those 30 inches, is there cultivation being done?
No.
No-till?
No.
Most of them are no-till then?
Most of them, not no-till. I mean, there's some no-till, not too much. Most of them do work the ground once. Biscuit.
Gotcha.
On it.
And then tell me
minimum
about...
Minimum till, they call it here.
Minimum till, sure. And then on the corn ground, what kind of populations are you putting in the ground?
They're running 32, 33.
And I know it's early for your season there in harvest, but what kind of harvest yields are you hearing?
All over the board. There's some guys 180 to 200 where they're combining some, but when they were doing silage, one field, they did put down a third of a bushel because they had to have a figure down. It was zero. Now, this was on sandy ground, and it wasn't a very big field. But 65, 70, 90... Now where they're getting the combine, they're better corn, they're running into the 135 to 180, 90.
How many ethanol plants you have in the area? You're there between Sioux City and Sioux Falls, roughly speaking.
I have one just 4 miles east of me.
Has that made a big difference in your basis?
There's plenty of them around here to haul with wagons. Not all that much. How do you know how much a nickel or a dime is? It's helped, but...
Well, it's only changed. Has it changed your historical basis very much, or not?
The rail cars that go out of here now that go by here, and I just live a quarter of a mile from the railroad track, are either full of coal or it's byproducts from the ethanol plant going out. There's just about nothing railed anymore. A few beans, but it's just the grain going out of the rail.
So the transportation costs are where you're picking up. Where everybody's picking up their numbers from, but in basis, you're telling me that really you're not. You may have picked up a 5 cent, but that would be normal out of the ethanol plant. But you haven't closed up any more than that. Is that right?
No.
Okay.
And but there's one also 30 miles east of here. There's enough of them up in this part of the country. In fact, there was one that was just canceled lately at Akron.
Oh, an ethanol plant that's not going in.
It's not going in as of now. They canceled the plans.
Hmm. Are you happy about all the ethanol plants in the area?
I think they will do like normal. We'll overdo it.
Yeah.
We will build too many. They're getting a little bit of trouble, and I've heard it on the radio also, with they're cutting back on the kind of the price of corn and ethanol prices went down, that they're not as profitable, and it's getting harder to get distillers because they're cutting back some.
Indeed. Well, how long will your harvest season last? You're just starting now. Will you be in the field a month or a month and a half? When will you be finished?
That, if you can tell me what the weatherman is going to tell me.
Well, under good dry conditions.
If we had 1 week, we'd finish the beans.
Okay.
Just about. And another 2 weeks of corn, if the weather was right.
Okay, so 3 weeks. So you could get out to... mid to late October and be done.
And that's pretty normal.
And that would be normal.
Yep.
All right. Well, you be safe during that time frame, okay?
Yes, it is.
Thanks much, Dale. We appreciate you being with us. Bye-bye. You know, Minnesota is the number four producing corn state in the nation. We have a listener in that area, as the other three have been, that we've talked to so far, listens to either a podcast or to the radio station on the web. Kevin Papp is in Garden City, Minnesota. Kevin, where exactly might that be?
I'm about 100 miles south of Minneapolis-St. Paul, so kind of in the middle of the state, east to west, and about 35 miles north of the Iowa border.
Are you in the middle of really good corn country?
We're pretty fortunate. We have some pretty good crops, a lot of years, good soil. This year we were just too dry in July, and as parts of Minnesota are too wet and others are too dry.
Yeah, and tell me about your harvest season so far. Have you gotten started? How far along are you?
We've gotten started pretty much. Majority of the beans have been cut. There's a few beans here and there that aren't quite ready. We had about 8/10 of inch of rain a couple days ago, so we're kind of out of the bean field right now. Guys have moved back over in the corn. Just getting a good start on the corn, probably the biggest thing on corn crop. It's been variable. Depending on the weather, did you get some of those July rains or did you not? But corn crop will be significantly down from last year.
When you take a look at the yield monitors, what's it run from?
Well, right now, corn can run between about 65 bushels and 180 bushels. So just kind of depends on what part of the field you're in. But I think we're going to see a lot of corn in that 140 to 160 bushel area where we were hurt by moisture.
Then your expectations for this year would have been higher than that?
Expectations would be higher. Our 22-year average corn yield is about 158. We've averaged 200 bushels the last 2 years across field averages. So we're significantly down from where we had been in the last couple of years, but probably closer to where we have been over the last 20-some years.
Are the elevators able to handle, and if the crops are in the shape that you're talking about, I'm going to suggest in your area they probably are, but have they been able to handle the corn and the onslaught that's coming in?
Yes, they have. Elevators have done a great job getting ready for the harvest. We're going to see some corn in bunkers and on piles in the short term, but harvest is moving progressively and seems to be no problems thus far.
What are farmers talking about in pricing strategies with the price of corn climbing as we move through the harvest season?
As we see these prices going up, probably one of the big issues is the basis. You know, certainly we're affected by basis a whole lot more than you are in your area. We're seeing that 80 to 90 cent basis being kind of a normal here right now in the harvest. But we're seeing it's always fun to be combining in the upgoing prices, but yet I think we in Minnesota realize, like everybody else, high prices won't last forever. We need to take advantage of some of these.
And do you have ethanol plants in your area?
I can see two ethanol plants from my farm. So we've got quite a few ethanol plants as well as three biodiesel plants.
And three biodiesel plants. So you have five in how close a range?
We've got biodiesel plants. Those are all over the state of Minnesota.
Oh, sure.
The two biodiesel or the two ethanol plants are one's 10 and one's about 15 miles away. So good use to add value there, and got a lot of hog barns in the area. We also got to remember animal agriculture is pretty darn important for this livestock and the crop industry.
It does take half of the U.S. corn crop, doesn't it?
Yes, it does.
Indeed. Tell me, when you take a look at ethanol, and here in this part of the world, basis has widened out dramatically compared to what farmers are used to, especially for soybeans along the Illinois River. Corn has done something that is similar, so they're not very used to the basis that's as wide as it is. Although it's still not nearly as wide as what you've gotten. Do you think that basis levels in your area have been lifted over the historical average, despite the bump that you got from ethanol?
Well, I think it's helped, and what it's really done is it's made our basis a little more consistent year out. We, before ethanol, so much corn had to go up to the river and then out by barge that way, and we really didn't have much of a corn market over the winter just because of that. And what the ethanol plants have done is they've given us a better year-round basis, and that's appreciative for people that don't want to wait till spring to move grain.
You know, I didn't ask, what are you doing at the moment? Are you in the combine?
I'm in the combine right now.
And what's the yield monitor say?
Right now we're in some earlier corn. It's about 18%, which is combining very well, and we're running at about that 162.
And are you on 830s?
I'm on 30-inch rows, correct.
Okay, and your beans, when you put beans in the ground, are you drilled or are you 30s on that as well?
We've gone all back to 30-inch bean rows, had some issues with white mold and some other things, and most of the beans in this area are either 20 or 30-inch rows.
And that's what we heard out of the northwestern corner of Iowa as well when we talked to the Gallises just a bit earlier. We do appreciate you taking your time with us, Kevin, and be safe. How long will you be in the field, do you think, today and then for the rest of this season?
Well, for today, I'll be in the field just for part of the afternoon. I'm also State Farm Bureau President, and we've got a county annual meeting up in the northern part of the state. So I'm going to try and get things filled up this morning and then take off for that Farm Bureau meeting. But we've got a good 2 weeks of harvest left here yet in Minnesota.
Well, be safe, and thanks for joining us.
I appreciate that, and as a farm safety instructor as well, I just want to remind everybody that it is important to take a break once in a while, get plenty of sleep, and let those people know where you're at. A lot of us work by ourselves in agriculture.
Indeed they do, and if you've heard me on the air before, Kevin, you know that I say now's a good time to take a little nap. You can always pick me up on the web later in the evening, and I guess that's what you do, isn't it?
Yes, it is, and I appreciate that. It's kind of nice to have technology.
Indeed it is. Thanks much. Kevin Papp is in Garden City, Minnesota, where he's on his combine like many other farmers around the Midwest.
Today's broadcast is made possible with support from the Carl Spine Institute, treating the region's most difficult neck and back problems. Information at 217-383-6555.
You've been listening to the Closing Market Report. This is WILL Urbana. I'm Todd Gleason. Thank you for being with us this afternoon for the CMR. Tomorrow, during the second half of our program, we'll talk with Rob Fraley of Monsanto. He'll be talking about all the technology that has been put into the corn and the soybean crops over the last decade, including the stacked genes. If you've got questions for him, you can tune in at that time and call us on this radio station, WILL AM 580. That comes up in the second half hour of the Closing Market Report tomorrow afternoon. We start at 2:06 and we'll run right on through the 3 o'clock hour. A quick look at Ed Kieser's forecast for the two-state region. It says clear and partly cloudy skies tonight. Lows will range from 43 in northwestern Illinois to 53 in the southeastern part of Indiana. Mostly sunny tomorrow, high around 68 in the Chicago lakefront.